The switch is right here. Yeah, there you go. Gentlemen?
Tony, can you hear me now?
Absolutely.
How about me?
Yes.
Has to be really close.
Hear me?
Yes.
I'm always. Can you hear me?
Never not hear Linda.
I don't even need a microphone.
AGP, are you ready?
We're ready.
Okay.
Whoops.
I'd like to call to order the regular meeting of the Oceana Community Service District Board of Directors for Wednesday, October 21st, 24th. May I have a roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Villa?
Here.
Director Rapolgo?
Here.
Vice President Austin?
Here.
President White?
Here. We all stand for the flag salute, please.
Ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Move on to agenda review. Do we have any changes in the agenda review? None? Entertain a motion?
I make move that we approve the agenda as presented.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Moving on to closed session. Counselor, would you like to...
Seeing no public come forward for comment, the board will adjourn to closed session pursuant to Government Code 54957, public employment of the general manager and the district. To Government Code 54956.9A, conference with legal counsel regarding the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus the City of Santa Maria et al.
Thank you. I'd like to call back to order the meeting of the Oceana Community Service District for Wednesday, October 24th. We're out of closed session. May I have a report, Counselor?
The report out of closed session is no reportable action.
Thank you. Now we'll call for public comment for items not on the agenda. The public comment period provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the board on matters of interest in the jurisdiction of the district that are not listed on the agenda. We ask that public comment be limited to 3 minutes. And I don't have any speakers for public comment. So I see nobody coming forward. We'll move on to special presentations and reports. Staff, Mr. Marishino.
Madam.
Oh, excuse me.
President.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah.
I was hoping to recommend at this time, since we have some guests from Cal Poly,
Master's Program in
City and Regional Planning, if we might be able to take item 9A.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was asked to do that, and I forgot. So we'll move on. Deviating from the agenda a little bit to 9A, which is consideration of a recommendation to approve the application for the use of district facilities from a Cal Poly Master's program to promote community outreach on community planning efforts with a waiver of fees. So I think we will just go ahead and call the Cal Poly.
And as they're coming up, and I'll let them introduce themselves because I know that I'll get some of them right, but not necessarily all of them right. I do want to sort of acknowledge a little bit of follow-up email that I've had with the team and the class, and it's all been great. We have worked out a little bit of bugs on logos and posting of things to the website and everything else like that. So I wanted to express my appreciation for their responsiveness to some of the emails that I sent. And with respect to the recommendations that... that the recommendation stands, but without any specific dates, so that we're free to coordinate with the Cal Poly team on dates moving into the future.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Can you?
And then it should turn red for you.
Thank you.
And then just make sure to introduce your names, where you're from, and I guess you're in the master's program, right?
Yes. Okay. Hello, thank you for having us here tonight. My name is Sarah Howland. I'm actually a resident of Arroyo Grande, a third generation from this area. I received my undergrad at Cal Poly in political science a couple years ago, and now I'm pursuing a master's degree in city and regional planning. I'd also like to have my two colleagues here introduce themselves as well.
Hi, my name is Madeline Jacobson. I came to Cal Poly's master program immediately out of my undergrad, which I did in Worcester, Massachusetts, in geography. My extended family is generally from the San Luis Obispo County area, so it's really nice to be back and around my relatives. And now I'll pass it to Devin.
Hi, my name is Devin Siriaco. I do not have any stakes to SLO County. I do not have family here, but I'm from Merced originally, up in the Central Valley. I did my undergrad at UC Davis, where I studied environmental science, and I'm going to move this up a little bit. And I am pursuing a dual degree in the Master of City Regional Planning, along with Sarah and Madeline, but I'm doing a dual degree also with transportation engineering.
Wow. Thank you.
So thank you for having us here tonight. We are three student representatives from the Master of City and Regional Planning program at Cal Poly. We are currently part of a planning studio that is hoping to do a community plan for Oceano. We are part of 20 students and are under the supervision of one of our faculty members, Cornelius Nuorsu. We provided his business card with the materials for you tonight. Unfortunately, he was not able to attend. This is during one of his scheduled class periods. Otherwise, he would have been grateful to attend. However, you will get to meet him in the future if you are able to attend community event meetings. So thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak for you tonight. We realize we are on the agenda in order to approve our use of the Oceana Community Service District facility. We have unfortunately needed to change that recently just because of time constraints with the quarter system. Being able to get things approved in a certain order, unfortunately, forced us to go towards the historic train depot. However, we do hope that you will be able to attend these meetings and will be able to have a great working relationship with the Oceano Community Service District Board. Instead, we wanted to use this time to introduce our planning efforts and be able to have you get a chance to meet us and be able to meet you and work towards that relationship.
So our project is one of the most substantial learning opportunities that happens in the Cal Poly Masters of City and Regional Planning program. And so Oceano has a community plan that was the content was last updated in 1996, and it was adopted in 2014. And our studio has taken on this project as a recommendation from the county. And so we wanted to share a little bit about what is encompassed in the general plan, in this case, it's a community plan, which is a general plan type document. So state law requires a community or general plan to cover 8 mandatory topics, which we refer to as elements. And you may be familiar, but just as a reminder, these mandatory topics are land use, circulation, housing, conservation, open space, agriculture, noise, safety, and environmental justice.
All of these elements should be listed, hopefully, on that material that we provided you.
Yeah. The plan for Oceano will include 5 additional topics for further depth to address unique needs of the community. And these additional topics are air quality, health, public facilities, economic development, and community design. So the planning process for us involves 3 key phases aimed at answering 3 key questions. So the first phase is about gathering information so we can understand the question of where are we today as a community in Oceano? The second phase is about analyzing information so we can understand where do we want to be as a community in Oceano? And then The third phase is about developing and comparing growth alternatives to answer the question of how do we get there. So over the next 6 months, or in our case, over the next 2 quarters, we will hold 4 public formal meetings, public formal community meetings, in addition to additional outreach activities to coincide with existing events taking place in Oceano. So together with the community input, the planning team will compile 2 of 3 essential documents for Oceano, the first being a background report on existing conditions, the second being an administrative draft community plan. The county would typically have to produce the environmental impact report, which would be the 3rd key component for Oceano. So,
And what we're hoping to provide to Oceano through this entire process is to create a community plan that establishes practical and obtainable goals associated with program ideas and grant funding options. The purpose is to develop a community plan that is like a general plan. It's a general plan type document that could help Oceano gain designation as an opportunity zone as recognized by the California Department of Finance. In terms of working with the Oceano Community Services District, we understand and appreciate your role and that you play in the community. And we understand that the role that you play, and that is why we have come to you first. You are actually the first community group that we're presenting to. And we also know that there's going to be a lot of overlap because we know that the OCSD manages and has oversight over public facilities such as street lighting and wastewater. And we are going to be looking at those same services, so we'd really appreciate any information and feedback that OCSD can provide us.
So if you do have any questions for us, we did provide our professors information, so if you do have more in-depth questions, however, we are available if you would like to ask us anything at this time.
Yeah, I have a question. How are you trying to reach the community at this point so that they're aware of these meetings?
Mm-hmm. So in order to do not marketing necessarily, but to be able to reach the community, we were able to do an investigation of like different organizations in the community, whether it be the Family Resource Center, the Community Health Center, the elementary school, the community center, you as a board, being able to reach out to you and be able to hand physical flyers that will hopefully be placed within local businesses and be able to be reached by a student by the community whenever they use those facilities.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yes.
I have another question.
Yes.
Are you doing significant outreach to the Hispanic community on social media? Because
yes,
you
yes.
should know that Hispanics yes. are big on Facebook.
Yes. Okay. So when it came to social media, because we hadn't been able to create a social media account, we started with a website. We started with more of like emailing certain specific groups, hoping that they would be able to then disperse between members as well as the people that they serve. However, that is a really good suggestion, and we will move forward toward that for this week.
Yeah, and if I can add, at our first community meeting, it's going to be kind of focus group style. And we have 3 students in our class that speak Spanish, and we've kind of distributed them among the different focus groups, and we're hoping that as needed, hopefully, they will be able to help with facilitation and translation at that focus group.
Would you be able to give us a little demo of how you would start the conversation? Pretend that you just met us and we're all Oceano. How would you start it?
That's okay. So I would start by saying, like, it depends on the context of where I'm meeting them, of course, and also wanted to point out that we were invited to attend the November 17th meeting with the Oceano Community Service District, which we are so grateful that you're allowing us the opportunity to participate in that. We realize mm-hmm. that you're doing many efforts in order to reach a larger range of the community. So generally, I would start using that as an example, maybe if I met them there, of, like, asking first of, like, if they're a resident of Oceano, and be able to see, like, really what their like favorite things about the community are. People are very proud of where they call home, and so we think that's a really good starting point of being able to see some key features that we would like to capitalize on, preserve, maintain, expand potentially. And so I think that's a great way of getting people to open up to us. We're not coming here to pick apart your community. We want to have an open door. We want to hear concerns, but we also want to see what people appreciate about the community. So I would say that would be like the first question we would ask.
Okay. Maybe it would be a good idea to go to the Saturday soccer games and pass out flyers there.
Okay, perfect. I love that idea. Thank you.
I strongly suggest that it also be in Spanish.
Yes, I was going to actually mention that. So all of our flyers include at least one Spanish component. All of our posters that will be at our community outreach meetings will have a component that's in Spanish, and we have specifically assigned Spanish-speaking students to be facilitators at the event. But yes, that's definitely, when we first started doing demographics analysis, even though I'm a resident of this area, I realized that we needed to move forward with Spanish-speaking as a priority.
So I strongly suggest that you have a professional interpreter there at your event, or if not, it be in bilingual, or if not, a separate event where it's just in Spanish.
Okay.
A lot of people, they get very discouraged when they go to bilingual events because of the time that it takes to do, takes twice the amount of time, and then the English speakers get really frustrated because they don't understand what was answered or asked, and they feel really left out.
Okay.
So in the bilingual event sometimes.
Yes.
So just think about how you're going to
perfect
tackle that.
Thank you. That's a wonderful suggestion.
I want to thank you for taking this on. It's going to be a big help to our community, and we really appreciate your efforts. I did want to mention that Oceano has already been designated as an opportunity zone.
Perfect.
So
perfect.
The work that you do will help us to draw investors to the community to use our status. So thank you.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
I was going to make one other little suggestion. And yeah, I think about it because I'm old. Okay. there are a couple of history books on the history of Oceano. And I would suggest that you start there.
Okay.
Because I think you will find that Oceano's development, its original development, would be very more surprising than you think, as it was originally developed with actually developers selling lots on the dunes, on the beach. So it started as a city, as developing cities, not as just a farm town. And I think there's, what, four or five waves of subdivisions. Lots is on the beach, actually the sand, they were even selling the sand. Some lots were 30 by 100.
Wow.
You could come over in tent. There was roads through the dunes. There was railroad to the end of the strand. There was a lot of stuff that came very, very early. We're talking before the 1900s or just in the 1900s, the 1910s.
Okay.
And I think it might be surprising to you. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you very much. We will
and
definitely look
Norm
into
Hammond
that.
Wrote a book called Oceano. So,
sorry, what was the name of that again?
Norm Hammond's book, Oceano.
Perfect. Thank you very much. We will look into this.
Yeah. Go ahead, Linda.
The recommendation was to approve the meeting location.
I just
wanted to ask a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
The recommendation was to on the locations, and I see where there's meetings in the future. Where did I see it? Plan for like the Oceano Depot, but wasn't the request, were we going to say it was okay to use this building?
Certainly. So I noticed on the schedule that the group is currently anticipating using the depot through their efforts. Your board can still approve the use of this facility in case that changes or if dates need to change, and let's say a date changes and there's a conflict with the depot.
As we get into the colder winter, I mean, the depot, and it's, I don't know if these are evening meetings you're planning, or?
They're generally 9 to 11 a.m.
in the for morning. Every time because yeah. there's not heat, you know what I mean? It's just like more of a warehouse building. This is more comfortable.
Yeah. That's right. So if your board ends up approving staff recommendations, then it will provide the flexibility.
So if they wanted to maybe move them yes. over here since that's on our mm-hmm. agenda.
Yeah. So once your board's done with comments, I have a few. But yeah. I want to go in
free.
Proper order here.
Feel free, sir.
Okay. So a little bit of feedback. So Tony Maricino is in the audience, and he's our head system supervisor for our water and our wastewater. And when it comes to the public facilities that Oceano is responsible for, whomever is on your team addressing that, my recommendation would be to schedule some time with Tony and I directly.
Okay. Yes. So.
And I know Kent's doing
yes,
some of
Yes, you met
that
Kent. So Kent is definitely the person who's taking on the role of leading public facilities portion, mostly because of his level of experience. So. I know that he has a meeting scheduled with you this Friday.
Yeah, and I have to email him and change that.
Okay, that's totally fine. He's right. flexible to do that, but I will mention and get Tony's contact information so that the three of you would be able to have that meeting. Thank you.
Sure. And then just so that the board is aware, also in some of the email correspondence, including one that I sent today, a topic and whether it's too much detail to address or not, that I kind of threw out there, is the question of the airport itself and the Airport Land Use Commission's role in zoning associated with Oceano. And I mention it because a couple years ago, an issue surfaced in San Luis Obispo where after some annexations, the city of San Luis Obispo overturned certain zoning determinations by the Airport Land Use Commission, requires a 4/5 vote. And what that did is it triggered a thought that if the city of San Luis Obispo felt like some of the zoning restrictions around that airport were too restrictive, then what's happened in Oceano? And are there discretionary actions taken by the Airport Land Use Commission that impair economic activity in Oceano, specifically Pier Avenue and along Highway 1, and whether or not there's an impairment of mixed use? And the idea is, I don't know, because I'm not a land use expert, I'm not an airport expert, but just taking the case example from San Luis Obispo, it begs as to whether or not there might be similar issues here in Oceano, and threw that out there as some food for thought. And then my last question comment really is that all of our board members have email addresses as well. And I encourage, communication with the board members as individuals. They can't really speak on behalf of the district unless they have discussions here and they make decisions here. And since our jurisdiction is limited to water, wastewater, lighting, and fire and emergency services, some of those other bigger, hotter topics that you find in land use planning and general plans and stuff are really outside of our jurisdiction. So our board members may have diverse opinions on some of those other issues, which would be good to hear from them, but then just to recognize that, that's really as individuals that they happen to be on the OCSD Board of Directors. But I encourage you to seek out their individual opinions as well.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I should also ask if this is the entirety of the Oceano Community Service District or if it's just Oceano.
It's Oceano.
Okay, so it does not include the village of Halcyon.
Sorry, did you say it does or doesn't?
Does it, not, it, or does.
It does include the
okay.
Halcyon.
It's, to be technical, it's the Oceano Census Designated Place Boundary.
Okay.
That we're working with.
Okay. Then you just need to know from me that that Halcyon is a federally designated historic district.
Okay.
That's not very well known, just...
Yes, thank you.
And if you want to know anything about that specific area, I would be happy to help you.
Thank you very much.
But I don't know that it needs to be included, does it? Technically it does, or...
Well, I think it's part of the county's planning area as well. Halcyon. So I'm not sure.
I don't know. Well, maybe that's some challenge that they need to find out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Luciana, you really need to take a seat in the audience.
I'm so sorry. I am hearing impaired. And if I can see them speak, I cannot understand what they say.
Can you sit right on the other side of her there? And so it doesn't, so you're not,
right.
Yeah, so you're not right in her workspace. Yeah. Yeah, sort of right back there. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Perfect. Thank you so much again for having
us
here tonight.
Yeah.
We really appreciate our
time. Thank you.
Don't go yet, though, because there might be some public comments and some questions from
we'll
the audience.
Yes, thank you.
Go ahead and sit down, yes. And I will now call for public comment if anyone else would like to ask a question or make a comment.
Yes.
Yes.
I am from the Oceano Beach Community Association, and I'm here to support this wonderful team. I am a graduate from Cal Poly. It's a wonderful institution, you know. There is no reason to not think that you will not approve the motion, that just in case they cannot use the train depot, they'll be able to use your facility. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity. They're fresh intake, hopefully unbiased, just politically free from just to see things as they are. I think we have a lot to gain. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Moving back to the board.
So is this a...
It's an action item.
Action item to... That we just approve their application to use the district facilities.
I'll move that we approve the application from the Cal Poly studio class to use district facilities to promote community outreach and community planning efforts with the waiver fees.
Can I make a comment first?
Well, she just seconded it. Now you can make a comment.
Okay. The only comment I would have, if all the meetings are in the morning, 9 to 11, that I'm wondering if that could be a problem with people that work Saturday mornings and also all the soccer games Saturday mornings, et cetera. I'm just making...
So that's good feedback for the Cal Poly team. The district, you know, we won't be directing dates or times of meetings.
Right.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0.
Sure.
Sure, come up and ask a question. We did take action, but ask a question. Sure.
Building off of that, from your experience, when are the best days of the week and times for these types of meetings?
Has anybody got any suggestions when your meetings are at Saturdays?
The community association meets on Thursday evenings at 6, so
there's always
evenings,
a Wednesday
meeting. Yeah, there's evenings during the week tend to be good, or I would also, echoing Director Gibson, say Saturday morning's probably not a great time. Mm-hmm. People have sports activities that they're doing, or maybe they want to sleep in on the weekend. So possibly like later in the day, on late afternoon on a Saturday would be better.
Perfect. Thank you.
Or
well, we are really interested in what days of the week and times you guys find successful. Because it can be a tough community to draw out to community events.
I don't know, Sunday afternoon. I don't know. What
not
do you think?
My opinion is like Saturday afternoon, not too late, because just like you, people have parties and social events.
Definitely.
It's the only time that they really have.
Like right after
Saturday
lunch,
in the evenings, you know, not too late.
Definitely.
Like I would make it at 1, 3, 5 at the latest.
Okay. Thank you.
You do need to know that there's a lot of people in Oceana who take pride in their children, and their children play a lot of soccer and a lot of softball, and you know, it's just a real sportsy. I believe, from my own experience, it's a sportsy community.
And volleyball.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving on, moving back to 7A, staff reports. And you can feel free to go back to San Luis if you'd like to.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
You don't have to stay till the class ends.
Good evening, Board. Tony Marchino. For the past couple weeks, we've had our daily round samples weekly, 8 work orders, 6 USAs, 7 customer service calls, 0 after-hour call-outs. Lancaster and Air Park have been already repaved after we installed the lines and the broken water valve.
Sorry, Tony, what's a USA?
Underground service alert. So if there's any excavation in Oceano, we get a notification from the underground service alert, so we go out to mark our utility lines, so the sewer and water, so they don't get hit.
Okay, when I've seen USA on the pavement, I thought somebody was just being patriotic.
So normally you'll see white paint. Yeah, they'll put white paint down and put USA, and then what company is USAing the area that they're going to work, and then you'll see green for sewer, blue for water, yellow for gas, red for electrical, you know, power, and then orange for fiber optics, AT&T cable. Yeah.
Thank you for the explanation.
Yes. And then Lancaster and Air Park were paved after the service lines were installed and replaced. All the materials for Air Park Bridge are staged at the location, you know, secured behind the fence, except for the pipes that you can't really physically walk away with because of the weight. Continuing meter changeouts, really focusing on sewer jetting. We prepared for an outage that occurred on Friday. Friday, the fire and sheriff in our facility was out of power, and PG&E was a little behind schedule. They were supposed to have power back on by 3. It didn't come back on until, if I remember correctly, about 5:15. So they were about 3 hours a little behind. No big deal. Everything was in place and ready for the power outage. Still continuing the trash pickup. And as for Air Park Bridge, we are physically starting that tomorrow. So they're a little bit behind. That's all right. And I believe it'll go pretty smooth. I'm hoping for the best. Expecting the worst, but it's all right. But I think it's going to go really well for us.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any questions from the board?
How many days do you think you'll be working on Air Park Bridge?
Can I let you know after tomorrow? Because tomorrow's the only concern I have is tomorrow. It's the initial putting the ductile iron through the bridge.
Okay.
And if all goes well, I really believe that we can get, you know, 80 feet of the ductile iron put in, 40 for water, 40 for sewer. You know, as long as that goes well, I believe we can do it. I don't want to bite my tongue here. The time.
We have 20 working days.
Yes, 20 working days. I really believe we can do it in 10.
I just want to make sure we get to see it. I just wanted to see you over there, so I didn't know if you would just be in and out, but I knew you'd be there a while.
Yes, yes. And, you know, there's going to be some longer days, but I really think we can do it in 10 days. So if all goes well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Mr. Ogren?
Yes, and I'll recognize real quickly I have a new to-do. I will contact the county, because I know that individuals who are hearing impaired at the Board of Supervisors are able to get some special headphones in order to maintain, you know, proper seating arrangements and everything. And so I'll contact the county about what kind of equipment they have in order to accommodate those who are hearing impaired. With respect to my general manager report, A lot of my efforts since the last board meeting have been developing some draft models for Central Coast Blue and the role of the South County Sanitation District, working with staff of the Sanitation District as well as Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, the three communities who pay for the Sanitation District. Those efforts associated with Central Coast Blue seem to be going forward positively. We're going to do some more technical work amongst the, well, with the technical group, and then we'll be sitting down with Pismo Beach. And I mention this because there has been a lot of effort, especially engineering and early environmental work on Central Coast Blue. But in the months and especially the first half of 2019, I think your board and the communities can anticipate that policy recommendations are going to be coming out for governing board decisions, policy recommendations that relate to issues like governance and how will the project be operated, how is the project going to be funded. So there's a lot of detail work that's coming on, and I think 2019 is going to be a big year for decision makers amongst your board as well as the other governing boards of Arroyo Grande, Grover, Pismo Beach, and the Sanitation District. We've also, on a similar vein, been doing working with the two city managers of Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach on the Five Cities Fire Authority, and we've run numerous preliminary evaluations of different funding formulas, and based on our initial review, then I've taken that and I've refined and put together a fiscal model as well for Five Cities Fire Authority, which is still in draft form as it's being reviewed by the two different city managers and Chief Lieberman. But similar to Central Coast Blue, overall I think that those efforts are moving forward in a positive manner. Both Central Coast Blue and the Five Cities Fire Authority are going to have significant fiscal effects as they move forward. And so we're really being diligent about being able to make sure to, evaluate the different funding options and what the different communities would pay for, and not losing sight of equity between the different communities. So that's been a lot of work. Next week, I'll get back and I'll start doing the draft of the Lopez contract amendments that your board informally understood that legal counsel and I will be moving forward with. Later on the agenda today, we've got two line replacement capital projects that I'm recommending that we begin design with them. But the modeling efforts associated with Central Coast Blue and Five Cities Fire Authority are substantially done, in draft again, but that's where then we work through with the other managers in order to try to refine that, ultimately leading to hopefully some joint recommendations. But at least that more consuming hours that I've had to spend are behind me. And then I've got to spend some time, again, lining up some of the capital projects. Your board has authorized us to go out to bid on the generator project. We need to move forward on a couple of these line replacement projects, so I'm going to have a little bit of work with that. And it's all leading up to the discussion that after that, then it's going to be addressing the rules and regulations and some of the issues that we have indicated that we would be working on with the Seabreeze Mobile Home Park. I'm not sure that I'll have, I think it's unlikely Seabreeze is going to have anything detailed for your first meeting in November, but the second meeting is where we've already targeted in order to do our prioritizations, goals and objectives for moving forward to 2019. So certainly rules and regulations and the issues with Seabreeze are going to be right there at the top of that list. And the other thing that I want to make sure that we do, and this is kind of a foreshadowing a little bit on future agenda items, but is in that second meeting in November, traditional with a new board, legal counsel will provide an overview of ethics training, Brown Act training, and those requirements that all of us have to be trained on in accordance with the state statutes. So that's my general manager update, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
And have there been any discussions with Lucy Amar yet about use of the community center?
In order to do the RFP for recreational programs.
I thought that was the next step.
It is. And so I'm primarily going to be delegating some of those conversations with Nicole, and her priority right now has been organizing our November 17th event. So, as you know, amongst the other duties that she has to do as well. So that I don't have specific timing on that yet.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else?
Nope.
Board of Directors and outside committee reports. Director Gibson.
Nothing to report.
Director Villa.
Nothing to report.
Director...
say it.
Rapoglo.
There you go.
I'll learn 4 years from now.
In lieu of a meeting last week, the Oceano Advisory Council had a voter forum here. A woman from the League of Women Voters came and presented information on all of the ballot propositions. There were about 20 people from the community that came out for that. And
good.
I think it was valuable for them.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Okay, I don't have anything to report
tonight. And from the last fire meeting, I think the most important thing for the community is as of November 1st, 911 will be going to CAL FIRE. A whole new system will be on board. Five Cities Fire Authority people have been up at the CAL FIRE, all of the firefighters have been up at the CAL FIRE station to study and meet the people and work through the new system. The dispatch will be in San Luis instead of in Grover Beach, but we think the training and we think there could well be a quicker call out time on some of that stuff. Instead of a telephone call bouncing around three different places, it can only go to one place. And we're very hopeful. So that all the dispatch for Five Cities Fire Authority will be at CAL FIRE. And the other good part about that is when you go into mutual aid situations, it's all coming from one place. They have all kinds of new computer stuff that shows where they're going, screens on them, all the fire trucks, everything's matched up. Almost everybody in the county except San Luis Obispo City. Many, many, many of the fire departments are all going to be on this one system. So,
is that landline only?
No. Well, 911, even if it goes to one of the either the sheriff's office or to CHP, it'll only be one call. It won't be like from CHP to CAL FIRE to Grover Dispatch. So it should be quicker even no matter where the 911 call bounces to first.
You know, it's an important reminder to anybody who might be watching or listening to the meeting that when we do make emergency calls from our cell phone, that we really need to try to be precise in what our location is. It can be challenging for the call center to identify exactly where we're at because it's going to ping off of a cell tower at best. And so being precise on where we're at is extremely important.
Yes.
I also wanted to add during the meeting today with Five Cities Fire and just kind of bringing up President White, what you were commenting on regarding the change in dispatch and the ability for the county's new joint dispatch facility to really provide an enhanced level of service. We see that as well with being able to understand what the response times are within Grover, Arroyo Grande, and Oceano. So a couple meetings ago, we had some presentations from CAL FIRE on where they estimated response times to be from the different stations. And now Five Cities Fire has the same software or similar software, and we were running through today a number of different scenarios about how response times would change. For example, if you just move stations or if you added a station or subtracted a station, it's amazing how powerful the tools are that are accessible. Those changes are as instantaneous to evaluate and understand the changes are as instantaneous as anything we can see on a computer today.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, I need to call for... got any more other comments from our board?
No.
Call for public comment on staff reports and board of directors and outside committee reports. Seeing nobody coming forward, we move on to consent agenda. Do we have any amendments on, no amendments on consent agenda? Any questions on consent agenda? Any issues on consent agenda? Any motions on consent agenda? Oh, public comment on consent agenda.
Okay, well then I'll make a motion that we approve the consent agenda.
A second.
It's been moved and seconded, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Moving on to 9A, which we've moved, and we move on to 9B. And do we want to ask for public comment ahead of the business items or individually?
For the most part, they're all pretty straightforward, so I would recommend public comment in advance.
Okay. And we have public comment in advance, and I have Lucia would like to speak on 9B, which is landscaping for the freeway.
Yes, I'm speaking for Oceana Beach Community Association. And we would like you to provide landscape maintenance on public property and blah, blah, blah. We think that this is key to encouraging Caltrans to accept the 8-foot easement from the railroad, which is needed for Front Street revitalization plans to move forward. You need private partners to help you, and the Oceana Beach Community Association has already told you, made it manifest that we are willing, that we would be very happy to help provide some of the most of the maintenance or some of it, and I'm here to renew that pledge to you that we will help and we will take charge for whatever you know we can do to provide that landscape maintenance. So please do accept that, provide landscape maintenance on land property, on your public property. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. Pablo is. I need to see who's presenting this.
What is the actual section of the? Is this what on this map here that says Union Pacific? And is it that section? Phelan and Taylor.
We're all getting organized.
What are we talking about?
Okay, so
that they're going to.
Did any other public comment on the business items?
I didn't see anybody else coming forward.
Okay. So agenda item number 9B, which is discussion of providing landscape maintenance on public property, public rights of way, and public easements. And that's important to make sure that we're only talking about public property. You know, some homeowners associations provide landscaping on front yards and different type of situations, but the statutes that authorize the district to provide landscaping is in Government Code Section 61100G, and it's specifically or expressly limited to those public rights of way and public easements. We're not talking about landscaping on private property. The question has come up, and I appreciate the comments from Lucia, because there's really two good examples in our county, both in Los Osos and San Miguel, where there is landscaping of public easements and public areas, and it's really community-based, and it's through community volunteers. And in both of those communities, they differ a little bit in approach. Los Osos certainly has more extensive landscaping in the medians, and so they have bigger group events and a more active group in terms of providing that landscaping maintenance. In San Miguel, it's a relatively smaller and probably more analogous to at least initially what we might be looking at in Oceano. And it really doesn't take a lot of volunteer efforts, but it still is reliant on volunteers. And the reason why is that the landscaping maintenance in these public right-of-ways is really in streets or highways. So we're talking about county right-of-ways, county streets, or in the example that I'll get to, excuse me, in a minute, it's within Caltrans right-of-way. And neither Caltrans nor county will traditionally have the funding to provide that type of level of community amenity because their jobs are much broader, countywide or statewide, and trying to get to all the things that they need to get to through their jurisdiction, they don't have enough money. And so they really rely on that if a community wants these types of landscaping amenities, then the community is going to have to figure out how to accomplish those objectives. The difference here in Oceano is that we're talking about a Caltrans right-of-way. And in Los Osos and San Miguel, they're county right-of-ways. And so the county has the ability to be a little bit less formal in developing those types of relationships. And I think sometimes you can even see that, you know, county has an adopt-a-highway and Caltrans has adopt-a-highway for cleanup efforts. But that's a lower level of service than the maintenance that we're really talking about for landscaping areas. And the reason why formality on Highway 1 is going to be necessary, it's simply because of Caltrans. Caltrans is going to require a formal arrangement. And in order to do that, the county has made it very clear to me that that needs to come from Oceano. The authorized power, the statutory power, though, requires LAFCO's approval. And so in order to get the power authorized, we have to do a plan of service. We have to fill out a LAFCO application. And in this situation, I've talked to David Church, who's the executive director of LAFCO, and he indicated that his ability to get it on the agenda would be pretty quick. We're not talking about, you know, a big issue. The services will be pretty minor. We still have to put together a fiscal plan. But certainly representation from some of our non-governmental organizations at LAFCO indicating that those are the resources that are really going to be used by the Community Services District will be important if we get to that state, stage. Also as part of the LAFCO application, we have to be able to identify how we're going to pay for certain costs. And even if we anticipate that the landscape maintenance needs to substantially be volunteer-oriented, the cost associated with watering the landscaping isn't something that we're allowed to just absorb into the cost of the water system. It's an actual water bill that we would have to send to ourselves, and it would require a little bit of use of your general property tax revenues. You know, on a typical basis, we're going to expect drought-resistant landscaping, low-watering landscaping, and we're talking about an annual water bill that's probably well under $500 a year. Turn it off in the wintertime. So in terms of the challenges that we have with the general fund and knowing that we have increasing costs associated with Five Cities Fire Authority, this cost item itself will still be nominal. And it's within rounding errors on budgets in some respects. So from my perspective, I'm not overly concerned about those nominal costs that we would incur in order to pay for the water. The real issue is can we get a community effort together that's going to be viable over the long term, and it's going to be definitely dependent on volunteer efforts. So on the screen right now, this is a general depiction, and it's, you know, when they do these surveyor maps, they're always difficult to follow in a little bit. But basically, the Union Pacific Railroad property, which has made an offer of dedication to Caltrans between Phelan and Taylor's property and where we have the Eucalyptus Grove, which is just south of the historic Oceano Depot. So that's what we're talking about a I think I heard 8 foot, but I thought it was a 10 foot wide swath. And again, Caltrans has been resistant in even conversations with the county to accept that offer of dedication. Carrie, the next slide, which was again provided by the county, or the next sort of, I'm not sure that that really helps a whole lot, but it's sort of the same area. And the Caltrans resistance is not surprising. Again, it's something where if they have an additional obligation. And if the board is interested in pursuing this, which I support, to me it's going to be more than just getting a LAFCO application together and submitting it to LAFCO. We've got to make sure that the individuals who from the community who are really interested in it get behind some correspondence with Caltrans. Vice President Austin is our liaison with Supervisor Compton's office, and the point is we've putting the plan together relatively easy, but that discussion with Caltrans when they are at the point where they're pressured enough that they're going to be responsive, then that's when we want to make sure to get that application to LAFCO. We want to be able to indicate to Caltrans that this is what we intend on doing, and after we've had a meeting with them or coordinated with the county, and Caltrans seems to understand that this is a real issue, then we move forward to LAFCO. So timing is going to be pretty critical. The board direction that I would seek, if you're so inclined, then is simply to, you know, authorize the application to LAFCO and to coordinate with the county and Caltrans. It may also be beneficial if a couple of your board members are interested to form an ad hoc committee in support of this effort, so that we make sure that elected officials attend some of those meetings and can voice, you know, the desires and the needs of the community better than staff can.
Well, I would like to volunteer to be on that ad hoc committee.
I would be happy to be on it. I have a stupid question first.
Okay.
There's no... I mean, it would be beautiful to have trees and flowers there, but what about extra parking? Or am I just... It's, you know, they're talking about narrowing the road, widening the road, doing a lot of other things. Couldn't it be used to widen the road or parking or something? It's a stupid question, I know, but...
So my understanding is that, for Caltrans to accept it for parking purposes, they're going to maintain whatever liability is associated with that, and I think it would be pretty unlikely.
Okay, I get the picture. Yeah.
You know, with respect for road widening, that might be something in the future. But they don't have similar offers of dedication for the full length of Highway 1.
Yeah.
We know the, you know, Phelan Taylor's been operating a produce stand, and what if there's such a point in time in the future where they consider redeveloping that property, then that would be the time that the county or Caltrans might ask for a widening of the Caltrans right of way in that area. But that typically is then triggered by a private property owner putting together, you know, a development proposal. And for anybody to try to seek, you know, additional widening in front of Phelan and Taylor, you know, the idea that they would voluntarily give it up, it would be a big question in my mind. There was a need, Caltrans could go through eminent domain, but it would be really difficult to find... How would Caltrans be able to make a determination or a finding of need in order to, you know, pursue eminent domain?
Out there, yeah.
Well, my understanding from the discussions I had with Gennaro Diaz at Public Works is that acceptance by Caltrans of this dedication is necessary for the road widening that is being planned.
My understanding is that the dedication's not necessary, that they can design around it, It's just that the county would like to see it included, and it would provide them more options as well as, you know, the landscaping option. But I think that that's something that the ad hoc committee and I could follow up with NRO on and make sure we really understand those details. Because he is going to have to help, and management at County Public Works will have to help open the door to the meetings with Caltrans.
Right. Yeah.
So then Caltrans, all liabilities transferred to OCSD then, if we go through the LAFCO?
That's right. That's what Caltrans would seek. That's why they want the formality of the agreements, to know who's going to do the landscaping easement, and then we could anticipate in that agreement there would be some sort of a transfer indemnification hold harmless provisions.
Okay.
And this part of the, you know, the revitalization program that Gennaro was doing with the split rail fence, is this part of that too?
Yes.
We're putting the split rail fence along with is that what you're talking about, the landscaping itself?
So this is contingent. It has to be approved for it to go on for the...
Oh, yes. This is, that's right. So any board action from your board today would be preliminary at best. It would require a number of other subsequent approvals. We'd have to meet with Caltrans in the county. We would have to be able to get the approval of the Local Agency Formation Commission. Anytime we want to add a new power to our district, so the state statutes provide what community services districts can do, but if we're not doing it already, we have to get LAFCO's approval before we can proceed with doing it. And then Caltrans action would be necessary, because even no matter what the Local Agency Formation Commission approves, the offer of dedication is to Caltrans, and Caltrans will have to still accept that offer of dedication. Nothing will happen if it doesn't start with this board, though.
Yeah.
So you really have two questions. One is, do you want to give staff direction to proceed with working on this issue and up to providing an application? If your board does that, then the second action would be consideration of an ad hoc committee.
So then when do we move, like, contact the county and get, like, Supervisor Compton involved? And would it be?
Right away.
Right away.
I would let Anaro know right away and Caleb. And
yeah. One more question. The trees, the big eucalyptus up by where the drainage, do we ever determine whether those are staying or going?
Yeah, my understanding of that is still on Union Pacific Railroad property outside of the area that's being offered. But the specific limits of the offer, which is, you know, from point A to point B, we would want to confirm with Hanaro.
Because I just wonder if those, after my experiences, if those eucalyptus trees constitute a hazard and need to go.
That would require an arborist determination. Certainly, sometimes, yes, that's the case. But
if their roots are going to get cut by the road building in the general proximity.
Oh, you mean in terms of the revitalization, would the modification or changes in the roadway?
No, I'm thinking of the drainage project.
Oh.
At 13th and 1.
Yeah,
right.
I'm not sure. Again, that would be a question we could follow up with Hanaro as to whether or not they've identified the removal of some of the eucalyptus as necessary in their project. I do know that the main drainage pipelines run parallel to Highway 1 and go further south before going underneath the railroad tracks, because that's where we have conflicts in our utilities on Railroad Avenue. I think that's right. Right across from Sylvester's Burgers is kind of where it goes underneath the railroad tracks. So,
clue down there?
Yeah, you know, the existing swale goes through the eucalyptus grove.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking. Yeah.
Yeah, but the new drainage project would move in a different direction.
Oh, okay. I thought it was going.
Yeah, no, it does not go on the same route.
Doesn't go underneath the railroad tracks right there.
Correct.
Oh, okay. I guess I should read my plans better, huh?
Yeah.
It's just the experience after we had the tree roots cut at the Pike and Elm, and those big eucalyptus went down. It's just they represent a serious hazard once they're already shallow rooted, and once their roots get cut, then they really can't withstand storms. And in a community where you lose 50 trees in 15 minutes, you get a little hinky about it. And I just, that needs to be determined, or needs to be studied before everything gets built. There's not much rush, but.
And I'm like as certain as I can be that they've addressed that. I just don't know the answer. So again, I'll follow up with Anaro on that as we're moving forward and check with him.
And I should say for the general public, I do not advocate removing any trees when we don't have to. And I do know that red-tailed hawks prefer eucalyptus trees for nesting. Thank you. What's your action?
I think we should pursue this as fast as we can. And I think it's a great, we'd have enough organizations in Oceano that would be bring the community together to beautify this highway. I think it would be wonderful. I think we'd have lots of support for it, working together, different with the Oceano Beach Community Association, the Kiwanis.
Boys and Girls Club?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great thing that we should do what we can to do it.
Yeah, I'd support it.
I completely support it.
I entertain a motion.
Okay, well, I'll make a motion that we recommend that we have our general manager do the first step of discussing. I got lost here. But we.
How about if I could throw out a suggestion and then your board member can say it. So move. But the suggestion would be to direct staff to work with the County of San Luis Obispo, Caltrans, and the Local Agency Formation Commission in developing an application to provide landscape maintenance on public property, public right-of-ways, and public easements in accordance with Government Code Section 61100G.
So moved, I think.
Second.
So moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0.
And then with respect to the ad hoc committee, I heard Director Roplogel volunteer real quick. My recommendation would be, since Vice President Austin is our current liaison with Supervisor Compton's office, that unless Vice President... Yeah, that would make best sense to me for the Director Roplogel and Vice President Austin to team up on the ad hoc committee for this purpose.
Okay.
But maybe that... recommendation isn't well received, so it's really up to your board.
Well, let's just start working on it and move forward on it, and we can figure that out.
And I'll be happy to meet the supervisor.
Do we want to make a motion for
on this particular item? My preference is for a motion, because when we're talking with Caltrans, especially the county, and to be able to identify the two board members as being appointed by your board as a whole in order to work on this issue carries just a little bit more weight.
I make a motion that we develop an ad hoc committee as proposed and appoint Vice President Austin and Director Rapoglo. I'm close. To serve on that committee.
I second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passed. Thank you. Okay, moving on. Thank you, Lucia.
Agenda item number 9C is in response to an inquiry from the County of San Luis Obispo on whether the district wishes to upgrade lighting standards on Airport Drive Bridge at a preliminary estimated cost of $5. The existing lights have been on power poles, and so as the county has been moving forward on the Airport Drive Bridge Replacement Project, they sent me an email simply inquiring of whether or not we were interested in having it on normal light standards. But with a cost of $27,665, that's a whole lot more than the landscaping costs that we were talking about, and it does concern me with respect to the challenges that we're seeing, especially with funding on Five Cities Fire Authority. So I didn't want to just tell them no. I wanted to make sure it was on the agenda because it really is a board decision. But my recommendation is to decline based on cost.
So what is there now is adequate without the upgrade?
Yeah, in terms of actually providing street lighting. Yeah. I also need to follow up with them a little bit because within Oceano, we have street lights, the county has street lights, and Caltrans has street lights. And basically, the county and Caltrans, their programs are based on health, on safety issues, right? So I found it a little bit odd that we were paying for the street lights over a bridge crossing. I would normally expect that to be whoever is paying for the bridge. We're responsible for those street lights that are really community amenities. And so, again, just based on the basic position, we have been paying for those street lights historically. I do know examples in the past where, when I was working at the county, we saw a lighting district paying for something, and we said, no, that's really a roads responsibility. So that's a separate issue, though. You know, on the very idea that these are street lights that have been historically paid for the district, the inquiry came in, and so we really have to respond to the inquiry first, and then I can separately see and, you know, discuss why are we paying for those street lights and why isn't the county.
If something is useful and functional for long enough, it'll become an expensive antique.
Where are those in relationship to the bridge?
I don't know the exact distance. I don't know if you recall, Tony, how far those lights are away from the bridge, but basically in close proximity is the best.
Very close.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there are anything in our budget, and I would hesitate to add them to our budget at this time. That's my feeling.
I agree. I think it's more important to get our money for the fire authority.
Do we need a motion on this, or do we
like
just take no action?
Nice,
taking no action gives me the ability to tell the county that we respectfully decline. You know, it's putting it in front of your board really is the issue of, do you really want us to do this? And if you would, then I would expect an action on that part.
We should decline. Yep, we're done.
We don't want those.
Decline.
Sorry, we can't buy new streetlights this week.
And part of that declining, I'll say, well, wait a second. We actually think you should be paying for it.
Well, so can we say that?
I will try that, but
try that one, please.
It may not be a long conversation.
Worth a shot.
Yeah.
And next up is Ms. Cassiola on the review of the district's budget status at September 30, 2018.
President White, members of the board, we have the first quarter budget review for you. I had a PowerPoint, but it's really small on the screen, so I'm just going to go page by page, and I'll just say the page number. You can follow if you want, but yeah, it was just too small up there. So we've attached the budget worksheets that have been adjusted for the board-approved budget adjustments and the encumbrances. Overall, the funds are tracking consistently with the 2018-19 budget, and no budget adjustments are necessary at this time. I was going to start on page 38. That is the revenues in the general fund, which haven't come in yet. But based on the provided estimate from the county, which I provided to you as a handout from Aaron Kessler, we should be right on track with what we had in the proposed budget, so that's good news. We are expecting the 60% of our property taxes to come in the month of December and the other half to come in April. So it looks low right now, but in the next quarter you should see 60% of our revenues. And then page 40 is the expenditures of the administrative budget. The majority of our front-loaded expenses are in the general fund, and this is where the district pays at the beginning of a fiscal year for expenditures. One being the CalPERS UAL payment, which is the unfunded accrued liability. It's a lump sum we pay to CalPERS. Another is the district's liability insurance, the annual software maintenance that we give to Tyler, our software program that does all our billing, all our payroll, and basically our entire system. Then we have a fixed asset, and that's half of our phone system. And that was going to be covered by the budget election expenditure that we won't be expensing this year. And that was approved at the board meeting on September 26th. The next is the LAFCO payment, the Local Agency Formation Commission expense, and then also the boot allowance that we give to the utilities crew per the newly approved MOU.
Carrie, if mm-hmm. when we're running through those different, we have account numbers on the left. And so the PERS UAL payment actually doesn't have an account number. But, for example, it's line 150, that's the insurance. It's line 226, that is the annual software maintenance. And line 247, that's the LAFCO payment.
Yeah, and then the boot allowance is under the operating crew overhead. So that's on page 41. So next is the fire fund on page 43. Similar to the administrative budget, we have a front-loaded expenditure for the CalPERS ULA payment for the district safety plan members. So that is 062 on page 43. Next is our lighting fund on page 45. So the lighting costs show us at 33% expensed for the first quarter under utilities. So that would be $295. We call it lighting, but it's basically what we pay to PG&E to keep the lights on. And that's because there's an invoice in there for June. And so that's showing 4 months of the year instead of three, which is our quarter. So once you take that out, it comes right in at 23%.
So does everybody... I want to make sure that we all catch up when we're on the lighting page. And
yeah.
Okay.
You got it.
Okay, then the equipment fund, we're on page 47. So for our quarterly estimates, we use that for the revenue worksheet here. We charge each fund based on what we expense out of the equipment fund, and that's done at the end of the year, so it's based on what we spend out of the equipment fund. So this is just an estimate. This isn't actually what each fund's been charged just yet. So it's coming in at 25% because it's just an estimate. But then once we get to page, the next one, 48, you can see we're below 25% and we're tracking right on budget.
And specifically that's services and supplies, which are running in at 15%? Right, because the equipment lease is going to come in exact because that's an amortized schedule. But maintenance vehicles, gas and oil, is slightly under, and so we'll see some savings if that continues.
So then we have the facilities fund on page 50. This is our rental income that we receive from the Sheriff's Building, Village AA, and Five Cities Fire, and they're all tracking right at 25%. The budget adjustment for the emergency generator has been added to the revenues for the use of the public facilities fees, which ended at over $230,000 last year. And then the next page is the expenditures on 51. And everything here is tracking with the budget. Next is the water fund on page 53. So revenues in the water fund in the budget worksheet show 17%, and that's because one of the six billing cycles have gone out and we in the first quarter. So we provided the second handout, the revenues, the revenue comparison target versus actual. So this shows the two cycles, because the second cycle hit after the end of the quarter, and it shows that we are, it shows the past four fiscal years, and we've been tracking billing versus actual to see the difference in each year, and this shows the seasonal patterns. You can see it goes, we use more water in the summers than we do in the winters, and our target since ordinance 2015-1 was passed show a shortfall in water revenues based on our target, and it will looks like this year will be very similar to last year's, and so the shortfall is right under all the target and actuals for the 4 years, and the accumulative revenue shortfall is coming in at $230,000.
And I was going to speak to that briefly.
Yeah.
And so in 17-18, our water system revenues, where the shortfall was $21,287, was almost exactly 1%. And when we do revenue projections that have to take into account how much people are actually using, being within 1% is usually pretty good. In the prior years, they were higher because we were in the drought situation in the prior years, and so we saw the community conserving water, especially in 16-17, to a degree that was greater than we had anticipated. 15-16 was really the first year that they went into effect. The governor had just declared the drought, and conservation was really high in that year. We're tracking the multi-year history on our revenues versus consumption because we're still in conservation-oriented rate structures. When the drought was declared and we implemented the conservation-oriented rate structures, it caused the water rates to go up in order to encourage conservation, and because when people conserve, our costs don't really go down. And it's often a frustration in the public when they say our rates went up and because we're using less water. A lot of people feel like that's a penalty, and understandably so. But the reality is most of our costs are fixed costs, and even in a drought, we have certain costs that go up in order to try to encourage conservation. So it's a challenge that a lot of different agencies face, that we have to worry about revenue shortfalls. And they were certainly significant in 15-16, went to about two-thirds of that level in 16-17, and now are much more lower. But in the ordinance that Carrie was identifying, 2015-1, it says that 3 years after the drought is declared over, we have to go to our post-drought rates, which is lowering them. So this time last year, the board did a slight lowering of the water rates. But if we did any more lowering at this time, then we would be incurring revenue losses. And what the goal has been over the three-year period is that as consumption comes back up in a post-drought situation, we can reduce the rates. So that's why we're watching it very closely. And so we make recommendations in fall and spring of every year. But in tracking the rates as we see them right now, we can't make a recommendation to adjust the rates yet because we're just not seeing consumption going back up. And in fact, in looking at the 17-18, and if 18-19 tracks similar to 17-18, that inclines me to believe then that we're at a new normal for the district in terms of water consumption on a household or on a per capita basis, and we're going to have to reevaluate our post-drought rates. Again, we have a three-year window to work with, and we're right now at about the end of the year one, so we have time to consider continue to look at how are we doing with the rate structure in comparison to consumption and our revenue targets. the fact that we're within 1% is, you know, generally that's pretty darn close. It's always nicer from a fiscal perspective to be 1% over rather than 1% under, but that 1% is in the community's pocketbooks, and so that's a good thing too. Again, point is we have to really watch that really carefully because we do have a 3-year period under the existing ordinance where we are going to have to adjust rates to the post-drought, or your board is going to have to consider revising the ordinance. So again, Celia just got back, cranked this out in the last couple of days. Carrie put it together, and they wanted to make sure that we had it on the agenda for tonight as part of the first quarter review.
All right, then in expenditures on page 54, there's a couple front-loaded expenses where we pay them at the beginning of the year. One is line 180, and that's memberships to CRWA, which is the California Rural Water Association. Another is the office expense, line 200, and that was for water pressure logs, a year's worth. And then we have the water supply, so Lopez and State, which is down on 261 and 262, right there at 50%. We pay the first one in July, and the second comes in December. There's currently a savings, a small one, in State water, but that's because the district is currently pumping, which is why line 290 is so high under utilities. But there has the savings in the State water could be used for the expected high bill that's coming in January that I know Pavel wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so what Carrie is speaking to in terms of the what we're seeing is high numbers coming in on line 290 for utilities. It's a relatively small dollar amount, $15,614. That's because we've been pumping and not taking delivery of State water, and so we see a small savings on State water, and those offset each other. The concern with State water is that we haven't gotten our 2019 bill, but we've gotten some early indication that we could have one-time charges that could be as much as $500 per acre foot. And that's huge because we have 750 acre feet. And the math would indicate that's $375,000 for State water that we don't have budgeted right now. And to pay for that kind of a bill would be a significant impact on our water fund reserves. If that ends up coming to fruition, we also have about $200,000 on deposit with the county right now for both Lopez and State water. And our very first response would be, County, you need to free up those deposits and allow us to use them for this excess State water payment. And we may also be needing to look at some budget cutting types of measures. And so I'm very concerned about what I've heard. In our rate structure, there is a rate adjustment based on pass-through water costs. And so if our Lopez bills go up or if our State water bills go up, there's the ability to automatically adjust the water bills. And that's all part of the ordinance. It doesn't take any additional board action. But those increases really wouldn't go into effect until July 1st. And so even in, we have yet to do the calculations on that, but let's say that we have this extreme, you know, this big bill. The best case scenario is that the second half of 2019, those costs would be covered through the water rates and the customers. The first half, so about half of the $375,000 or roughly $180,000 to $190,000, we would have to cover ourselves because it's not, you know, rate increases won't go into effect. So we would need to look to, again, those deposits that are on hand with the county as well as cost-cutting measures. Now, why is it that we're looking at a $375,000 potential bill? And the bottom line is that, well, I should say the early assessment is that the State Water Project and the Department of Water Resources just basically blew it. what happens every year, they bill us based on estimated charges, and then they adjust based on actual charges. And I talked to Central Coast Water Authority, Ray Stokes, who's their executive director, who indicated that normally every year there's a shutdown for state water for maintenance purposes, and the shutdown can be as long as a month. Well, in 2015, during the height of the drought, Santa Barbara County needed the water to continue to flow, and so they did not have a shutdown in 2015. Because there was no shutdown then, that means the maintenance costs were minimized. And then in the subsequent years, in 2016 and 2017 and 2018, it appears that the Department of Water Resources used the actual costs from 2015 that did not have a shutdown in order to project our bills for 2016, 2017. And then, of course, in 2016 and 2017, they ended up doing maintenance work, and so now they're catching up with us. So one of the things that Ray Stokes, again, the executive director of Central Coast Water Authority, is doing is that there's auditors that are hired by the state water contractors in order to look into the accounting of the Department of Water Resources and the State Water Project. So he's been able to get the auditors to look at DWR's, the Department of Water Resources books. And separately, he's discussing with the Department of Water Resources taking the costs and assuming that they're valid and we do need to pay them, but figuring out how to pay them over time rather than all in, you know, a single lump sum. So we know the basis of why the surprise bill is coming forward, and it certainly seems like the Department of Water Resources left hand and right hand weren't communicating very well. We know that Central Coast Water Authority has engaged auditors to look at what the Department of Water Resources is doing, and we know that the Central Coast Water Authority is engaging in discussions to try to have these one-time charges spread out over a longer period of time. So I wanted to make mention of it because if we see it and if it's sort of the worst-case scenario, then we're going to have to take some actions in order to address the budgetary impact, and they will be significant. But as Carrie had indicated, everything else in the water budget seems to be going pretty well.
So then on page 57, we have the sewer fund revenues, which are very similar to what was going on with the water fund revenues, where only one cycle is included in here instead of the 2 out of 6. So that's why they are at 17% and not 25%. But after October 1st, they are right at 25%. On page 58, we have sewer fund expenditures. There's a couple that seem to be high but should level out after this quarter. One is the maintenance on structures, which is line 163. This was from the lift station motor that was fixed and then reinstalled. Another miscellaneous item was $499 down under other expenditures. This was a claim for $1,350. It was related to the force main that was damaged on Air Park Drive at the beginning of the project. We have already since signed a reimbursement agreement to cover those costs with the county, so those we will get revenues in that. Last, we have the garbage fund, and the revenues are on page 60. Revenues come from our franchise free agreement, and they are on track with South County Sanitary. We are expecting our landfill saving payment during the second quarter, and that's the lump sum under their franchise fees. Next is page 61, the garbage expenditures. There's two expenses here, one on 210. That's postage, and that's running high from the postcard we sent out for the fall cleanup. Your board made a budget adjustment for $10,000 to cover the fall cleanup, and we received our bill from South County Sanitary after our we have a $6,000 credit at the beginning of each year for free services, and the remainder of that was placed against our bill. And our final bill turned out to be $1,408, so we'll see a huge savings against that budget adjustment, which can more than cover that postage cost. Then the professional services is also high. That's line 220, and that's from we have a roll-off at the yard, and that's been emptied three times this first quarter, and that should level off since the fall cleanup was such a success. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do we need to take action?
No action necessary. Budget update.
Okay. Any questions?
I don't have any questions.
No, it's positive we didn't have to make any adjustments.
Yeah. Okay.
Especially this early in the year, because normally those come in the fourth quarter. So.
Yeah. Moving on to a 9E update on the Water Resource Reliability Program and consideration of a recommendation to approve two proposals from Canon Corp to design the water line replacements on Highway 1 at North Swing and Truman with a budget adjustment of $25,000. Mr. Ogren?
Madam President, members of the board, I do have a quick technical correction. And Carrie, if you could pop up the other PDF. It's North Swing and Pershing. It's not North Swing and Truman. And I'll illustrate those in a minute. The update on the Water Resource Reliability Program is out of the three components, which is the low impact development component in order to promote groundwater recharge within the community, injection wells in terms of evaluating where good injection wells might be within Oceano for reclaimed water that Sanitation District and Pismo are working on. And then third, the leaky pipe component, which is really the big component of trying to figure out and prioritize and provide cost estimates on our water system replacement needs. So those were the three components. On the low impact development component, that draft report has been prepared. I reviewed the administrative draft. We did some conceptual review of different project alternatives several meetings ago, but I anticipate that that report will be on your agenda in the very near future, and it's well scoped, and I'm very pleased with what the consultant efforts have been. With respect to the injection sites, which addressed basically three different areas. One is our existing water yard, Halcyon area, and then third, near Rio Grande Creek, where Halcyon and Highway 1 comes in. Tim Cleethan and Spencer Cleethan, Spencer and Tim Cleethan Associates are the hydrogeologists that have done that work. They've completed their report and are just doing some minor edits right now to finalize that. So that will be on your agenda for review in the near future as well. And I'm even more impressed with that report. It was a really well done report, and it provides us some good information with regard to the groundwater basin and potential injection sites. And that's a little bit of a teaser so that you're excited about when we actually get that on the agenda, but I won't go into any more detail. And so the focus right now is on the leak detection work. And in the staff report, I indicated that we are currently working with the county and the Department of Water Resources, a unit in the Department of Water Resources that is different from the State Water Project unit in the Department of Water Resources. And in order to modify the scope of work of our existing grant, because in the leak detection work, there was two major components. One component was to figure out where our pipes are leaking, and then second is to develop prioritizations and cost estimates on what it's going to take in order to replace all these old pipes. After the grant was awarded, we also got a technical assistance program award from the State Water Board, where they paid for California Rural Water Association to come in and work with Tony and Jason and Casey in order to do a leak detection evaluation, where they actually hooked up listening devices on valves throughout the system, because then by listening, you can tell whether or not those pipes are leaking. It's kind of a fascinating science. some of it depends on what kind of pipe we have. Is it a plastic PVC pipe? Is it a steel pipe? What kind of pipe? Because they have to be able to listen to the different kinds of pipes. And it's amazingly accurate also for them to be able to identify leaks. Well, that whole leak detection work by California Rural Water came free of charge, and it came after the grant. So our pleading right now on the Water Resource Reliability Programs grant is that that work was sufficient, and we would like to free up approximately the remaining $50,000 in the budget to start doing design work on the projects that we need to move forward on. And so the early indication that I've gotten feedback from the county, who's talked to, again, the state, is that, yeah, that makes sense. They don't want us to do, the sooner we get into, the, I shouldn't say what they don't want us to do, what they do want us to do, the sooner we can get into design work and start replacing those leaking pipes, the happier everybody is. That's ultimately the, you know, the goal of the state's grant programs. So I'm getting real positive feedback that we're going to be able to do that. But the necessity of moving forward with the award of the two proposals from Canon, and I asked Canon to provide the proposals because they're doing all of the other work associated with the Water Resource Reliability Program, is that the timing is related to when the county and Caltrans plan on doing asphalt repairs on these two roads. And so this slide shows the vicinity of the two different locations. The left circle shows where North Swing and Pershing is at, and then the right circle in red shows where we're looking at the replacement project in Highway 1. And so go ahead, Carrie, and zoom in on either of those first and then the other one. So it's in the springtime that County and Caltrans have indicated that they're going to do asphalt repairs on these different roads. This one here, where it's on North Swing and Pershing, is an existing 2-inch water line. It's a galvanized line. Tony has been fighting leaks on that one for quite some time. We've got an existing leak that is surfacing, and if the county is going to go in and do an asphalt program, we don't want a leaky pipe underneath that asphalt anymore. We really need to replace it. Not only can it create damage to the asphalt, but when we go in and do road cuts, when we trench into a road within 5 years after the county has done an asphalt overlay, our repairs are much more extensive. If it's an older road, then our repairs are limited, what they call trench cut repairs. But if it's a newly, if it's a road with a new asphalt overlay, then the county's demands on us are much more extensive. So we really want to get in there and repair those water lines before the county does their road work. Again, on North Swing and Pershing, that's an existing 2-inch galvanized line. And then, Carrie, maybe you can take us over to the other location. So this is just around the bend in Highway 1, and right there at 21st Street and Highway 1, which is pretty much smack dab in the middle of that red, it's really not a circle, it's an egg, but that's where CHC is, the Community Health Center. This, our current atlases on a north-south along 21st Street still show that that's a 22-inch galvanized line. CHC had to replace that in order to provide the flows around CHC, so that's actually already been repaired. But the 2-inch line that then goes from the intersection westerly still remains. And again, a 2-inch galvanized line that's is a little bit of a break and a disaster waiting to happen. We want to get in there and get that repaired prior to Caltrans coming through and doing their asphalt overlay project. So we definitely see these as being high priority projects. They need to move forward. The timing of getting the grant modifications is one that I don't want to risk. My recommendation is we don't risk waiting for the approval on the grant modifications. We really need to get this work initiated as soon as possible. The work itself and the scope of work from the count on proposals is anticipating that the contracts are going to fall underneath the alternative bidding procedures, so we don't need to do full-scale plans and specifications. It's the design that's necessary to get the encroachment permit from the county and the encroachment permit from Caltrans, which we believe is simple, is sufficient for our simplified bidding procedures. And on that note, then, is I'm recommending $25,000 as a budget adjustment for the approval of these two items. They add up to $21,310, so that provides us a roughly 15% contingency. The one thing that we might anticipate from Caltrans is that in order to get an encroachment for permit from them, it's not uncommon for them to provide require more detail than the county does. And there's really two different details associated with an engineering drawing on this. One's called the plan, so that's the bird's eye view of where are the pipes going to be located in the street from a bird's eye or a plan perspective. The second is the profile, which is really the not a cross section, but it's the elevations of the actual pipelines in the streets. And typically the county doesn't require a permit, a profile on this type of work. They'll just require a notation that says it has to have at least 3 feet of cover and, of course, avoid all existing utilities. But Caltrans tends to be a little bit have more requirements, so I wouldn't be surprised if they require what's called the profile. So the Canon proposal does not include the cost of the profile, but the contingencies would be more than adequate to cover that if it's necessary. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
We can't do the actual construction in-house?
No. I think that it will it'll exceed our statutory authorization to do force account work. I haven't even talked to Tony about it, but especially in Caltrans with traffic controls and everything,
yeah,
I would be more concerned about that. I have a lot of confidence in Tony and Casey and Jason, and I suppose there is a possibility that here's the scenario. So if we go out to bid and there are no bids received, then your board is free to contract however you choose to contract. And on a project like the North Swing Pershing project, I could see us developing a purchase order with a contractor where they potentially work with Tony and Jason and Casey sort of under a team approach.
Yeah.
That would be a possibility. But that possibility of doing those teaming arrangements really only opens up under the public contract code if we get no bids. So we're, all cost estimates indicate we're compelled to go out to bid. It looks likely that we can stay within the alternative bidding and, keep it simple on everything. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's unlikely that we could self-perform either project.
Yeah, and it makes sense from let somebody else have their people standing out on Highway 1.
Yeah, and
No, I mean, yeah.
And the biggest concern there is that we do see when contractors get really busy, we see contract bids going up. And we saw that for the relocation work on the Airpark Drive project, and that was a great project to self-perform because it's all within a site. There's no traffic controls. They're going to get started on it tomorrow. It's all free and clear for them to work, and they've got 20 working days. So that is a really good prime example for a force account.
You've got roads you've got to keep open.
Yeah, so my biggest concern is that what happens if we get contractor bids from like maybe one or two and they're just out of line, and we'll have to address that at that time. If that's outreach to the contractors earlier becomes important, and also providing more schedule flexibility ends up becoming important as well, because if we're demanding on schedule, then the challenge is they might need to work overtime, they might have to pull people from other jobs, And there's cost to contractors associated with that. You know, sometimes people perceive that in a busy environment, contractors' bids go up because they're like, well, if I don't get the job, fine, I'm busy, and if I get the job, I'm going to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of a unfair perception. The truth is when contractors are busy in order to do those other jobs, they have to bring in new staff that maybe they need to train. They have to move staff between different jobs that has different costs associated with it. They might incur more overtime. There might be a factor that they want it to be more lucrative as well, but the fact is they have a lot of work. So if we go out to bid and we provide them scheduling flexibility that they can come in and do certain sections of pipeline and do the jobs between other jobs that they're doing, then it's more likely that we can get better bids. But it comes down to both the scope of a project as well as the schedule that ends up driving the bids. And so if we know that contractor bids are going up, we can be more accommodating on the schedule, which is another reason why I want to get this thing designed and get the encroachment permits issued so we have more schedule flexibility with the contractors prior to the overlay projects.
Yeah, now the overlay for the county is coming in the spring?
Both of them are coming in the spring.
In spring,
yeah.
Okay.
So these two spots are your priorities. What other problem areas may we have coming up that are similar or to a lesser degree problems?
Well, that's a great teaser for that third component of the county's the Cannon report. We have seen the cost estimates overall. The total of the cost estimates of the line replacement, and again, this is a draft document, so Cannon's going through and reviewing all of their work. But it looks like it's upwards of $4 million. So that's a significant, and so we're going to have fiscal strategy in order to address that, pursuing both state and federal loans on it that are low-interest loans and trying to figure out how to maximize grant revenues. So in terms of the priorities of the project, as soon as Tony is done with the Air Park Drive project, we'll sit down with Cannon and, you know, confirm their assessment of priorities versus Tony's assessment of his knowledge of the system and where he thinks priorities are. And overall, that number, though, it's a big number, but based on the water system master plan that was prepared around 2010. I looked at that previously and then did some inflationary adjustments based on what's called the engineering news record, where they will provide kind of like the consumer price index, but instead the engineering news record will publish statistics on the increases in construction costs. And so Cannon's conclusions are within the ballpark of what I would expect as well.
One water line at a time.
Yes.
Yeah. Anything else?
Nope. I think it's imperative that we
entertain a motion.
Public comment?
Oh, excuse me. I forgot again.
Oh, you took all public comments.
Oh, I took public comment.
Public comment?
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's imperative we get on these right away. So I'll make a motion. If there's any other comment, that we approve the attached proposal for design of two waterline replacement projects with a corresponding budget adjustment of $25,000.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you. Moving on to... Do we have any hearing items or written communication, late communication?
I do have some written communications that I wanted to share without getting into too much detail. And so Jeff's going to hand it out. And Tony is aware of this, and he's been coordinating with County Public Works. But I want to just talk about it real briefly. And what it is, it's correspondence received on October 11th from the County Public Works Department, which is essentially directing us to modify our facilities at the corner of 23rd and Paso because the county is going to be doing some pedestrian enhancement projects there. And so it's great that the county is doing some improvements in Oceano. I always get concerned when I get a directive 6 weeks in advance that we've got to do something that I wasn't aware of. And so I will be providing feedback to the county to make sure that they are coordinating not just with Tony, but also with the management of the district. And overall, responding to this particular item is something well within the crew's capabilities, and it's not going to have a significant, the budgetary impact is going to be nominal. And so I don't bring it to your attention because I'm concerned about how this specific project is going to affect us. I bring it to your attention because of the idea that when the county comes into Oceano and they do bridge work or roadway work or drainage work, they have the legal ability to direct us to move our facilities. And I recently corresponded with the California Special Districts Association regarding this particular issue because Oceano is a disadvantaged community. And we're seeing that our cost to relocate pipes on Airport Drive, and then especially our costs associated with the Oceano Drainage Project, are going to be significant. And they, in those cases, those are good pipes. And so both projects, the county received significant grant revenues in order to implement their projects, but there was no sharing of the grant revenues. So I do anticipate coming back to your board. Maybe it, we'll talk about it more at the second November meeting, but with a recommendations associated with perhaps some legislation, because if the gas taxes move forward, if they're not repealed, the level of activity that we're going to see from the county and from Caltrans is only going to increase, and that's going to be true for disadvantaged communities throughout California. And I think more attention needs to be provided to the actual impact that it has on the fiscal situation of disadvantaged communities, where we have limited reserves and they really need to be dedicated to infrastructure that's dilapidated or it's old and it needs to be repaired. So I wanted to make sure to bring this attention. It's going to create a work order for Tony. It's well within his capabilities, and this particular project is not really a concern, but after time and time again, I am concerned about how these will affect not just Oceano, but other disadvantaged communities. And while they have the legal right to do so, there's equity issues that I think need to be addressed in the long run as well.
Well, I'm also concerned that, complete all this by November 26th of this year. I mean, you've got a month. And I know that, but it just seems like there should have been more accommodation.
So,
because
and
you
that
have
was my
planned,
first reaction when I got this.
Yeah.
I was, in fact, I might have even been a little bit more reactive.
Yeah.
But, you know, first thing I did is talk to Tony. And in this particular case, the efforts that we have to do are really pretty nominal. So after they do the rough grading and they set up the new profile for the road, then Tony will they'll do our modifications prior to the county going back and finishing the paving work and everything. And I don't know, Tony, if you want to speak to it or not, but oh, the board's not taking any action either. It's informational only. So
well, I'll shut up if I need to.
So currently, it's three water valves and a water valve lid and concrete box. And they're getting modified anywhere from 2.5 inches to 16 inches. And then there's one sewer manhole cover that's got to get modified 2.28 inches.
Okay, so it's not.
So it's basically the would be myself and the crew coordinating with the contractor who gets the bid. As they do a rough grade, we go back in there and then lower our valve boxes to the valves mm-hmm. and the sewer manhole. And then basically concrete it in, they come in and repave, and everything's good. So it's not a difficult task, just more coordination with whoever the contractor is doing the work.
Except for you're already working on Airport Drive.
Correct, but
yeah.
They still got a little ways to go. That's just a tentative schedule. I don't see that. There's coordination and communication with the county.
Okay, thank you.
I'm not so concerned right now.
Yeah. And, you know, legal counsel expressed a valid concern. Alternatively, the way that Tony and I might have handled this is to discuss it during his operations report as a prelude of activities he has coming up, and me addressing it in the general managers, and the second part, you know, potential future agenda items. So, again, really clear, there's no actionable item for your board, and it's an informational update only.
And we won't discuss it anymore. Thank you. Anything else?
I'd just like to remind everybody that at the next Oceano Beach Community Association meeting, which is November 1st at 6 p.m. at the Community Center, the Environmental Justice Team from the California Coastal Commission will be attending the meeting, and it'll be a good opportunity to talk to them about the environmental justice issues that we face here in the community, including state parks and the sewage plant. So I hope everyone can attend.
And reminder again on the community meeting in connection with the Cal Poly project is from 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturday, November 3rd at the depot, the historic Oceano Depot. Anything else? Do I hear a motion?
Move that we adjourn.
Meeting adjourned.